Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. Let's roll. What's going on with the wars? Well, House Republicans are trying to say they won't give money to Ukraine unless Biden and the senators let them change the rules on illegal immigration and asylum. And my guess is that Ukraine will get the money and the rules on immigration will not get changed, because Ukraine getting money, that's what the arms manufacturers, the banks, and the oil companies want. And open borders and not changing the rules is what all rich people want. And, you know, Republican House members also want that too. Republican voters want something different. Usually voters get screwed. We'll see. But I guess the one thing that you should know is there's some sort of deadline. First off, at the end of the year, I think the politicians go home for the holidays, so there's a little bit of a deadline. Like, if they don't get it done and soon, then they won't get it done for the next week, couple weeks after that when they're on vacation, and it'll just take a while. So they'll probably get it done soon. But I guess as far as weapons go, Ukraine is good for 3, maybe 6 months. Basically, the war. Ukraine can fight the war just fine for a long time. But the thing that Ukraine's going to run out of money on, and apparently this happens in January, is America is paying Ukrainian salaries. It's kind of like the government shutdown thing in America, where if you shut down the government, then every government employee gets a paid vacation, but they don't get their money until the vacation is over. I think with Ukraine, basically, workers in Ukraine are paid for with, you know, American money, at least as far as police officers, hospital workers, I mean, you know, important stuff. I don't know if the dog catcher in Ukraine is sucking on our teat or not. But so, anyways, a lot of people in Ukraine may get an unpaid vacation, but they can still fight the war. And that's like $60 billion that Biden wants for Ukraine. And then Europe is going to give them 55, but they're kind of, they haven't pulled the trigger on it yet. And I don't know if, like, if America doesn't do it, then Europe is like, well, we're not paying either, or I don't know, we'll just see. And the Israel-Hamas war, I think we've gotten to the point where it's just, this week is the same as last week. I mean, headlines about something happened every day, but I think the war in general is just, it's a steady state. It's not a stalemate, but, you know, it's just the same amount of whatever it was that Israel is doing and they want to do, they keep doing it. And there keeps being talk about when America is going to make them stop doing it, but none of that has happened yet. Like I said, it's just basically how good of an example can Israel make of Gaza to stop all the other people in the Middle East who want to attack Israel. It's like, you know, to the north, Hezbollah was thinking about attacking Israel, and Israel's like, hey, before you attack us, just watch what we do to Gaza, just so you know what will be coming your way. And Hezbollah's like, what do you mean coming our way? What are you going to do? And Israel's like, we're going to level you, you know, rubble. What do you mean level? What do you mean rubble? Just watch. We'll show you what we mean by level and rubble. And I think at this point, Hezbollah is like, you know what? I think I do understand what you mean by level and rubble. And it's similar with the Houthis in Yemen. They're far enough away that they, I don't know, they want it. They want a piece. It's like, you want a piece of me? I want the whole thing. But they're too far away and too backwards to really jump in on the action like they want. And the various groups are like, come on, Iran, jump on in, help us out, come on. And Iran's like, I don't know, man, he crazy. Like, crazy insane? Yeah, those Jews be insane crazy. Abortion was in the news because a 31-year-old woman who'd already had 2 kids was pregnant with a third. 20 weeks in, she learned that her kid had an abnormality and was not going to be, was probably going to die before birth, or was going to die soon thereafter. Anyway, something that killed fetuses 90% of the time, and then it didn't mean you were going to live a normal life if you made it past birth. And she lived in Texas, and so Texas has a law that says 6 weeks, you got to get your abortion in the first 6 weeks, unless you're going to, life of the mother, you're going to die. And so the baby was going to die, but not the mother. So she took it to one judge who said, give her the abortion. And then I think the Texas Attorney General took it to, appealed it, and they said, don't give her the abortion. This all happened in maybe a week, so it was happening pretty quick. And I think, I mean, she was at her 20th week, so she had maybe a few months to try and get it done legally if she wanted. But that the latest ruling was from SCOTUS. So SCOTUS is Supreme Court of the United States. SCOTUS, like POTUS, is President of the United States. SCOTUS, POTUS. Anyways. This case had gotten to SCOTEX, which is the Supreme Court of Texas. So I think if she wanted to keep going above them, maybe she couldn't, or was gonna have, have to go to the Supreme Court, and that would take a long time. Anyways, so she just went to another state and got an abortion. And maybe a 6 week ban is intolerable, and it's gonna, you're gonna be able to find examples of women that are, where you're like, well, no one should be forced to carry a baby to term when the baby is guaranteed to die, and it makes the pro-choice side look really good. But the problem is when you find, so you find a woman with the right fetal abnormality or whatever, or could at some point we'll have one where the woman has the abnormality. But you go find someone with the right abnormality, but then also they have to probably hire a lawyer. I mean, the woman almost has to think of it herself. It's a little hard, like I guess lawyers could go out and look for the women, like chasing ambulances. But anyways, in this case, and I think in most cases, the woman has to go out and find the lawyer and like, hey lawyer, I want to take this all the way to the Supreme Court of Texas because I'm pro-choice. I mean, this is not what the mainstream media said, but basically, this woman had her stuff together enough to take a court case to the Supreme Court of Texas. That's a very, very difficult thing to do. What's much more easier than getting a court case to the Supreme Court of Texas is to just drive or fly to another state and get an abortion. And so it's hard to find the right person. Like you want to find someone who's so poor or, I mean, to put it bluntly, maybe a retarded girl with Down syndrome or something. Something where they don't have their shit together enough to go to another state to get the abortion, and yet you can use them to take the court case up high. Hopefully that makes sense. There's been two national news abortion cases since the Supreme Court said states can outlaw it if they want. And the other one was, I don't know if it was Iowa and Indiana, somewhere in that area. There was a 7-year-old Hispanic girl who had gotten pregnant and she had to go to the next state over to get her abortion. I mean, she got her abortion. That story I just told you, that was as far as the mainstream media wanted to take it. The person who got her pregnant was an illegal immigrant who was dating her mother. They didn't talk about that part. But so obviously a 7-year-old cannot drive herself to another state. But the thing is that when you get to the national news situation, someone will give you a ride or just whatever it is. Just once again, the problem is it's not going to be someone who is forced to carry a baby to term. Like by the time the media is talking about you, it's either because you're rich and super pro-choice and you want to use your fetal abnormality to take a case, course, take a cor course case all the way to the top, or if you're a kid, well, people will help you out, or if you're retarded, I'm sure they would help you out. Well, okay, so that's just a whole bunch of some white-splaining, mansplaining person of myself not being respectful of people's feelings. It's all a terrible tragedy, but whatever. That's just the anti-woke podcast. The part that I wonder about is the news consumer. When they were watching, NBC Nightly News, and they're getting this story over a 1 week period, little updates. Oh, the judge said this. Oh, the Supreme Court said that. Oh, she went and got her abortion in another state. Like, if they're that super rare animal, the swing voter, are they like, this anti-abortion stuff is Is that anti? Which side is anti-abortion? Anyway, this anti-abortion rights stuff is intolerable. Or they're like, oh, I guess it wasn't that bad. She just went and got an abortion anyways. I mean, it's a little harder than putting two and two together, but it's not too much. I mean, if you're like a young woman who's worried about, you know, maybe you're pregnant and you're thinking about it, and you hear about all that, are you like, oh my God, I'll never be able to get one? Or you're like, oh yeah, you just go to another state. I mean, I don't know. How do people, what was the upshot, the takeaway from this whole thing? I don't know. And the Advisory Opinions podcast, legal podcast, was talking about this SCOTEX case this week. And it's David French and Sarah Isker. Sarah's my favorite pundit. They're the hosts of the podcast. And they're both pro-life. And they both are against the Texas law that says you can't get an abortion after 6 weeks. I mean, they're both Harvard Law graduates, so a pro-life Harvard, you know, the belly of the beast of wokeness graduate, you know, you get an unusual person, and that's fine. You can have conflicting opinions, or maybe they're not exactly conflicting because you feel them in a certain way. But basically, you know, I'm pro-choice. But anyways, if you're pro-life and you don't agree with 6 week abortion bans. I mean, this isn't like a total ban. Like, you know, apparently it ain't that bad a murder. If you think it's murder at all, you don't think it's that bad a murder. You're like, well, you can do a murder after for the first 6 weeks, then you can't do it after that. I mean, I just wonder what does it mean to be pro-life? And, you know, there's a lot of people who put their money where their mouth is, and they'll just say, no, it's always murder done. And that is a coherent worldview. I wonder about other pro-life people who, oh, they got to split the baby, to put it one way. Who split the baby? Was that, I think that was from the Bible. It was either a Greek myth or from the Bible. And like two people went before the king, and the king made all the legal decisions for his kingdom. And they were like, one of them was like, this kid's mine. The other one's like, no, the kid's mine. He's like, oh, well, we'll just split the baby and each of you get half. And they, I guess it was, that was exactly what they did. He wasn't joking. I'm thinking King Agamemnon, but maybe that's the wrong king. I might be confusing it with the Sword of Damocles. I think that one's Greek. That's where there's a king, and above the throne is a sword held up by a string. And someone's like, oh man, it's so great to be a king. You get all this money and privilege and white privilege or whatever. And he's like, oh, well here, you want to be the king? And he gives the person the crown. He's like, sit on your throne, new king. And then they look up, they're like, why is this sword hanging by a thread right above my head? He's like, well, that's what it means to be the king. And then there's that Mel Brooks movie where he says it's good to be the king. But you know, look that up on YouTube. That's hilarious. So David and Sarah, it's the AO podcast, and like David, he's religious. I mean, that's frequently pro-life. It sounds like one of his daughters got pregnant, and they got a result that said, maybe your baby's going to be all messed up, but we don't know. You're just going to take another test. And the daughter said, okay, we're not going to do any more tests. I don't want to know. I'm keeping the baby no matter what, so we can't look into it any further. And then, I don't know, David's telling the story. He doesn't say what happened. My guess is that the kid turned out to be fine. I don't know. And then Sarah brings up that high blood pressure is a very common side effect, I guess, of pregnancy. And sometimes, I don't know if it's always just any high blood pressure when you're pregnant, or sometimes, or it's high enough, or whatever. But there's a term for it, preeclampsia. I've heard that word before. If you would have asked me a week ago what preeclampsia is, I wouldn't have known. But now I can tell you that it's high blood pressure when you're pregnant. And so Sarah was saying that when a woman dies from pregnancy, it's because of high blood pressure. Now, having high blood pressure doesn't mean you're going to die. But if you do die, it's going to be because of the high blood pressure. It's just, it's a hard thing on the body, I guess. And so this goes to the Texas law, which says a doctor needs to say that this pregnancy is life-threatening And if that doctor is lying, that doctor goes to prison for life. And so I haven't thought through all the ramifications of that. I think basically we're waiting on court cases to figure out exactly what that means. Like, that's what they said in the law that they passed. But what do you, you know, like, doctor just says, oh, yeah, I think it's threatening her life. And then that's the end of it. Or do you round up a bunch of other doctors in a court case and they say, oh, he's wrong. I don't think that would have threatened her life. Or do you need to, like, find, like, you know, the drunken text message of a doctor who's like, I knew that wasn't threatening her life, but I said it was anyways. I don't know. But the question is, the high blood pressure, is that a threat to a woman's life? I mean, it's a very, who knows what, a 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 100, somewhere between those two range, probably, that your high blood pressure will kill you during pregnancy. And if, you know, if high blood pressure is a reason to say this is threatening your life, you can have an abortion, then it basically makes the ban meaningless because so many women have high blood pressure. And I mean, I don't know, like for me, like when I go to the dentist, I'm on blood pressure medications now, but for a while there, I was going to the dentist and I guess they're worried about working on your teeth and going, we have a bleeder, and you dying right there in the chair. Anyways, I would go to the dentist and my blood pressure would be over 190, which was, or 180, 180, 190, which was their cutoff for doing a teeth cleaning. And so I would have to sit there and just, anyways, my blood pressure would come down. Just something about going into the dentist office. I always get my appointments in the morning, so maybe it's a morning thing. I mean, I'm not like freaking out. I'm not a person who's afraid of the dentist. But for whatever reason, I go in there and then my blood pressure number is really high. And then it slowly comes down. And so, you know, I'd be like 190, and then she'd check my blood pressure 5 minutes later and it would be 183, and then she'd check it 5 minutes later, be like 181, and she'd be like, close enough. It's kind of funny. It would still be over 180, but she'd be like, close enough. We know you're not going to die, or I'm not going to poke you, and blood is going to go shooting across the room. But I guess basically this is the, you know, where the rubber is just about to start meeting the road on these carve-outs for abortion bans. Because, you know, the classic one is the life of the mother, and the other famous one is rape and incest. I guess, is incest always rape? I don't know why. You never hear about a incest-only one or a rape-only one. It's always like rape and incest. Basically, there's two things, life of the mother and rape and incest. And I guess life of the fetus doesn't matter. You can, well, I mean, hell, if you can kill a fetus with an abortion, you can kill a fetus with carrying it when it's going to die anyways. I don't know on that. But I think some state said you can have an abortion for rape or incest, but you got to go to the cops and accuse the man who got you pregnant. You can't just say, oh, I was raped. Basically, you can't just... The idea is all these women are going in saying that they were raped when they weren't raped, and they just get a free abortion out of it. I mean, you know, basically, abortions are illegal. Unless you're willing to lie. So maybe, you know, that's one possible interpretation of that. And then now this Texas one is like, abortions are illegal unless your doctor is willing to lie. Possibly. The old cartoon, Steamboat Willie, enters the public domain on January 1st. So that's the very first Disney cartoon, and it stars a funky looking Mickey Mouse. And so the copyright expires. There's copyright and there's trademarks, which are different. Trademarks never expire. So I don't think you can start doing cartoon pornography called, you know, Mickey Mouse in the title. But you can make whatever kind of cartoons you want with the old looking Mickey. It's kind of, he might be black and white. And then probably, so that's, see, that's 95 years ago, whatever year that is. And then maybe in the 40s or 50s, Mickey Mouse got a update to his look. He kind of has more of a red belly or something. Anyways, and that's how he looks today. So you can't use the modern looking Mickey that came from the 40s or 50s. You can only use the crazy old Steamboat Willie one. But so I don't know the numbers. I'm just going to make these up. But like, it used to be that copyright lasted 50 years. And then when Mickey Mouse was 49 years old, Disney got all the politicians to do its bidding, and they said, okay, instead of 50 years, make it 75 years. And then when Mickey Mouse got to like 74 years old, all the politicians got, or Disney got the politicians to change the rules, and they upped it to 95 years. And if Disney hadn't pissed off half of America, I'm sure they would have extended the copyright term. But basically, Disney didn't have the juice this time, and so, you know, I don't know what the, let's see, like Superman came from 1938, so that's 10 years from now. I don't know if the owners of Superman are going to get Congress to extend the copyright right before, you know, the super old versions of Superman go into the public domain, but something to keep an eye on. As a actual left-wing person, not a woke tard, but I don't like long copyrights. It's like trademarks on pharmaceuticals. Like, you know, you invent something, you get to sell that thing, you know, I don't know, in penicillin or something, you know, something that's really saves humanity. Well, you paid to invent it, that's fine. You get to make money off it exclusively for a long time, that's fine. But eventually the world should just be able to own the thing, you know, when it's multiple generations later, like you and your whole life, and then, oh, do your kids, do your grandkids, their whole life, you know, I mean, you know, there should be a limit. And so maybe we finally got a limit, 95 years. I mean, I'd like to see him take it back down to 75 like it was. But speaking of Disney making half of America hate it, I think Harvard University is finally getting half of America to hate Harvard. Like, it's a little bit of a different kind of boycott. The thing about Harvard is getting in. It's not really the education that you get there. You can, you know, if you're the smartest person on the planet, you can go to a mediocre school and you will still do the best of anyone, because it's not the school, it's, well, unfortunately, it's genetic. But what going to Harvard says is you are, you know, you have such amazing genetics, you were able to get into Harvard. And so it's just a shortcut for, you know, people who are hiring or whatever. If some girl's trying to decide which guy she wants to have sex with, etc., you just go, oh, you went to Harvard, you have amazing genetics, I will hire you, I will have sex with you. And so that's not going to go away instantly just because half of America hates Harvard. But I think Harvard is not going to enjoy being hated by such a large part of America. And the reason why they're hated is because of this thing where they're anti-Semitic and they're letting the pro-Hamas students run wild. And there was the congressional hearings with the three university presidents. I mentioned it last week, one of whom got fired or forced to resign. But Harvard has a black woman as a president. She's only been in a few months. And anyways, you don't just go firing your black women presidents. It's, you know, she's historical. You have proved that Trump is racist and you're not racist by hiring her. You can't just go back on that. But the funny thing was, I guess Christopher Rufo, if you know that name, otherwise doesn't matter. But basically some right-wing journalists had been sitting on the fact that Harvard's new black female president, not a lesbian, I guess they couldn't find a lesbian, but she is a plagiarist. If I remember, I'll put a link. It doesn't matter. Maybe I'll put a link in the description. But anyways, the Harvard Crimson, the school paper, did a good article where they just showed, you know, what she said in her papers and books or whatever. Well, I don't think she ever wrote a book. And then, you know, what was said by other people, just, you know, whole paragraphs, basically, with just a couple words changed. Anyway, it's just massive plagiarism. And it turns out she either wrote 11 or 20 papers in her 20-year career. So she is just like the absolute bargain basement, bottom of the barrel scholar. But anyways, because she's a black woman, she's failed right to the very top. And then when you do that, it's like when you choose people for that reason, I mean, just all the warning signs are there. She couldn't write her way out of a paper bag. Anyways, she's a plagiarist, and I think Harvard had kind of already said they weren't going to fire her, so they couldn't go back on their word, even though now it's like, she's anti-Semitic. Maybe she, no, she's not. She's just helping the black people or whatever. Anyways, plus she's a plagiarist. They're like, ah, damn it. Anyways, they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, promoted. Anyway, I think most of America is not following it. But anyone who's following it is like, wow, affirmative action really gets you a subpar individual. And Elon Musk has been going on about Disney and interviews more. He really just cannot stop talking about how Disney got woke. And then there was this news that maybe Elon Musk is going to open up a university in Texas. And that's not exactly happening. But what it is he put down $100 million to open up maybe like a K-12, I don't know, primary, secondary, I don't remember. But basically, it's like something like K-12, don't quote me. And then with the option to open up a university thing for it later. Maybe like, you know, as the kids go through the grades, when they get to 12th grade, you open up the university the year after that or something. But I believe what happened is when you open up a school in Texas, you have to file some paperwork about the racial breakdown of your school. And so online, there was this papers that he had to file that said, I mean, it's a tiny school. It's going to be like 50 students. And I don't think they have any students or hired any teachers, but it was like, it was going to be 22 white kids and 18 Hispanic kids. And I'm making these numbers up, 4 or 8 black kids. I don't know. Anyways, and then they're going to have 4 white teachers and then 2 teachers of every other race, Asian, Hispanic, black, and then maybe 1 Native American teacher. It doesn't matter. Anyways, when you open a school, you have to, I think, just make up what you think the racial breakdown of your school will be. And so that information is floating on the internet. And Hunter Biden is fighting with the House Republicans. They want him to come do a closed door interview or whatever, subpoena. And he doesn't want to, so he went on the steps of the Capitol and said, I won't do it. And then he kind of did it right there on the steps of the Capitol, but he wouldn't answer any questions. Most of the Hunter Biden stuff that's interesting is in the future. But there was one interesting part. So all his remarks were written down. He didn't speak off the cuff. And he said that his dad was not financially involved in his business. Which, you know, the wording is so that woke people are like, see, I told you, his dad had nothing to do with his business. And then for the anti-woke people, you're like, oh, your dad wasn't financially involved. So he was involved in every other single possible imaginable way except for financially. And then to thicken the plot, the New York Times ran some sort of headline including Hunter Biden's quote, but they left out the word financially. So like the New York Times was like, Hunter Biden said, Joe Biden was not involved in my business. And then everyone's like, no, he said, Joe Biden was not financially involved in my business. And the New York Times put a little correction at the bottom of the article, but I mean, I don't know. We'd like to know who did that at the New York Times and why they did that. Obviously, they're not going to say. But it's just like, see, there's a reason why I wear this tinfoil hat. Just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me. And I was talking to my ChatGPT app on my phone, asking it about, you know, was the election stolen? I was like, I asked it, I described how the CIA coerced the social media into censoring a story that would have changed the outcome of the 2020 election. And I was like, was that election rigged? And ChatGPT was like, no, that's not rigging in an election. That's election interference. So I don't know. I used to say the election was stolen. And I was like, that's not entirely accurate. The election was rigged. And now AI tells me it wasn't even rigged. It was just election interference. I think I'm still going to say rigged. But I think I said I was still going to stay stolen. And then I stopped doing that. So I guess we'll see. We'll see what my cojones allow. And then I was talking to AI about threats to democracy. And I'm like, you know, they say that people on the right are a threat to democracy, but they already rigged the election. And I'm like, past tense, present tense, future tense. What does it mean? You know, they say you're a threat to democracy, but they already did. They're not a threat to democracy. They already damaged democracy. What's the word for that? And AI says it's either undermined or subverted. So, you know, the false accusations of threats to democracy on the right, and then they actually undermined or they actually subverted democracy on the left with the 2020 election. And I'm just trying those words on to see if they fit, if I like them, if they're a little tight in the cojones, and I need to loosen something up. But basically, so the FBI and the CIA subverted democracy when they coerced the social media companies to rig or interfere with the election. But the thing is, you know, the social media companies, they're all in San Francisco or at least Bay Area, and like they would have subverted democracy on their own, like if they had thought of it. They hadn't thought of how to do it, I think. It hadn't occurred to them exactly how to subvert democracy, but they would have done it on their own without coercion. I mean, I guess ideally just no subverting of democracy would have happened. But if you're going to subvert it, if you're going to undermine it, then it's good that the CIA and the FBI got in there and did it instead of just, oh, it's a private company, they can do whatever they want, because that would be the answer if, I mean, you know, back when we didn't know the FBI and the CIA was involved, before Elon Musk bought Twitter and exposed that, that was the excuse. Oh, it's just private companies. They can censor whoever they want. And so hopefully social media is afraid of Trump winning this upcoming election and dropping the hammer on their ass so they don't subvert this upcoming election. I mean, I don't think they're afraid. They're so rich. You know, if you're worth $10 billion, what are you worried about? But maybe they'll keep their fingers out of the pie. I mean, I think the FBI and CIA is working with them right now, but the Supreme Court is probably going to tell the FBI and the CIA to stop subverting democracy, and then we'll see if social media just keeps going. I mean, that might just be their autopilot setting. Set it to subvert. But in related news, Epic Games, a giant video game company that makes the video game Fortnite, they have been suing Apple iTunes Store, whatever the Apple Store is, the Apple Store and the Google Play Store, Android Store. Anyways, those stores charge 30% when you pay money for an app, and then they charge 30% for every in-app purchase. And so Epic Games sued them over the in-app purchase something. And a court case against Apple went in front of a judge, and the video game company lost. And then the court case against Google, I guess they were able to request a jury trial, and the jury ruled in favor of the video game company. And they weren't asking for money. They're asking for Google to change its policies on being mean to people because it has almost a monopoly on basically cell phones. You know, do you use a cell phone? Well, if it's Android, then Google controls everything that you are able to do with it. Apple for iPhones. Basically, at some point, that's too much power for companies to have total control over everyone's cell phones when the cell phone is the thing that they use 8 hours a day. And so this is just another little chink in the armor. Can you still say chink in the armor? I think someone doesn't allow that. Anyways, someday there's going to be alternative app stores. You know, just, you know, when you have an iPhone, you're like, I bought this iPhone, I pay for it with my money, I want to use whichever app store I want. I want to use, for instance, I don't know, the Daily Wire app store that only allows conservative apps on there or something. So someday, alternative app stores are coming, and this is just a little chink on the way to making that happen, I believe. And a few years ago, the European Union was talking about passing a law that, you know, anyone who sells phones in the European Union, I'm looking at you, Apple and Google, has to allow an open app, I don't know, ecosystem. But I haven't heard anything about that in a long time, and they probably realize that if you have an open ecosystem, then whatever. People who are not currently in power are going to be able to speak freely, which that is not what the people in power want. Basically, I was waiting for the European Union to come save us, and I don't think they are. They're probably going to pass some law the opposite direction, saying no free speech ever. If you can't sell phones in the European Union if anything close to free speech is allowed on that phone. I could see them pass that law instead. A new law has been proposed called the College Admissions Accountability Act. And I think when you propose a law in Congress, a lot of times you'll have like one senator and then one representative from the House as the backers. And so I forget who the House guy is, but J.D. Vance, who's kind of a Trumpist senator from Ohio, is the senator backing it. And, you know, senators don't write the laws. They have a staff who can write laws, but I think they don't also usually write the laws. It's think tanks, which just means, I guess, a non-government organization, an NGO, yeah. I think there's a think tank for, you know, there's left-wing think tanks who are always writing left-wing laws, right-wing think tanks writing right-wing laws, you know, pro-Israel ones, maybe pro-Hamas ones, who knows what. And it's like the laws are already written for you. You know, the senator's like, I want to build a wall. They go, probably just ask all the right-wing think tanks, hey, what draft laws do you got about building a wall? And they, you know, they go, oh, we got 7 of them. And you look through them, you're like, okay, I like that one. Well, you probably don't even do that. You have your staff look through, pick me the best one. And then they're like, okay, this one's pretty good. But you might want to change a few things. Then you have a staff change a few things, and then maybe the senator looks at it. But this College Admissions Accountability Act, so the Supreme Court said you can't use race as in college admissions. Can't be racist against Asians and possibly against whites. And then the universities, some of us said that they're just going to work around it and ignore it. And anyways, the rest of them are like, you know, you probably shouldn't say that out loud, as you work around it and ignore it. And the way the Supreme Court made their ruling, it was, they left some loopholes. Let me remember. The loophole that they specifically mentioned, I think they're like, there may be some loopholes. I mean, they didn't put the word loophole in there. There may be some loopholes, like you can write an essay. You know, you can't check a box. You can't, I think they specifically said checking boxes. Anyways. You know, checking the box, black, is not okay. But if you say, well, as a black person, I've experienced racism and my uncle was killed by the Ku Klux Klan, you know, that stuff can be taken into account. Basically, hey, college applicants, all you, start lying. Lie as good as you can and talk about all the racism that you've faced. I think they may have mentioned adversity. You know, and white kids, make up something about how your dad's an alcoholic and the college will probably ignore it, but you're going to have to lie to even try. If you're not lying, you're not trying. Anyway, so this is a law to basically drop the hammer on the colleges and not let them do a bunch of racial discrimination. And I don't think anyone thinks this law has any chance of being passed, but probably the first step in passing a law that goes against, you know, that outlaws racial discrimination again. Basically, it's just, we're serious. The 1964 Civil Rights Act says you cannot discriminate on the basis of race. And this law is like, yeah, you know that law from 64? Well, we're serious about it, colleges. Anyways, so the first step is you write some laws that don't get passed, and maybe eventually you write a law that does get passed. So step one of many on a 1,000-mile journey has been taken. And I think before any law happens, the Supreme Court, like, they're just, whatever. The colleges are going to discriminate. People are going to take the court cases to the Supreme Court again. Those things take years. But still, if, you know, a bunch of court cases back and forth, you know, can you discriminate in employment? You know, oh, colleges, no, but what about employment, etc.? Even if those court cases take a decade, that's probably faster than they can get one of these laws off the ground. Unless 2024 is a clean sweep for Republicans, which there's no reason to think it will be, but it could be. And speaking of the Supreme Court, I guess next summer they're going to look at whether or not mifepristone, the abortion drug, can, I don't know, be sent through the mail, be prescribed by non-doctors, basically be used willy-nilly so that states who outlaw abortion, it doesn't matter because you just do it through the mail from another state. And I learned this week that John Roberts does not like Trump. So John Roberts is one of the Bush appointees, So basically, you got three liberals, they hate Trump. You got John Roberts, apparently he hates Trump. So that's four out of the nine that hate Trump. And then Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, they're the conservatives who were there before Trump got into office. And I think they, I don't know if they like Trump, but they at least support the same stuff that Trump supports. So that's two on the Trump side, four against. And then there's the three that Trump appointed. And I don't know yet. I think that two or three out of the three also hate Trump. But I don't, that's just speculation. Don't quote me on that one. So we got four against Trump, two for Trump, and three that we don't know. But the funny thing will be is that they probably hate him, and it's the ones that he picked. I'm recording this Friday night, so maybe some major crime will happen before Monday morning. But so far, there hasn't been any mass shootings or serial killers, I don't think. I think maybe one of the white mass shooters got sentenced. So, I don't know, NBC Nightly News brought that out. You know, if you don't have a white mass shooter this week, or shooting this week, you still got all these shooters that did shootings in the past. You can maybe find some reason to talk about them. So they did. And then there was a 16-year-old Hispanic girl. I think she was a cheerleader. I forget why they were making a big deal about her murder. Well, I mean, it was because the pictures of it they had of her were very, very cute. And I think in cheerleader outfits. I mean, it was basically missing white woman syndrome, except she was Hispanic. But, you know, the media judges which murders to cover based on attractiveness. Anyway, so that was why she was chosen. And I think the murderer, they didn't catch the murderer for a few days, so that lets you talk about it every day until they catch the person. And then it turned out to be an illegal immigrant. And then she was 16, I think he was in his 20s, so I haven't heard yet whether or not that was like her boyfriend or just some maniac who came across the Rio Grande, we don't know. But it was a little anti-narrative, the whole thing. And also, you know, a lot of times Hispanic stuff falls between the cracks, so that was good. That was good to cover it. America is not just black and white. And actually, to be fair, so yes, they like to bring back and remind people about white mass shooters. But this week, the mom of the 6-year-old who shot his teacher got 2 years in prison. I think she'd already been in jail for 2 years. Anyways, the mom is black, and her 6-year-old son was a holy terror. I mean, they weren't talking about that this week, but if you find this court case has been going on for a long time. I mean, it made national news because it was a 6-year-old who shot his teacher. That's, you know, that headline writes itself. And then I talked about it before when it happened, maybe 2 years ago. Anyways, they went to a lot of trouble to hide the fact that, you know, the 6-year-old was black, the mom was black. I mean, we still never, you don't get a picture of the 6-year-old because they're underage. But when finally the mom got charged, then I was like, aha, we see what's going on here. Actually, I shouldn't say that. But I don't know. It's just, you know, or maybe white 6-year-olds are out shooting teachers too. Or maybe in the history of America, there's only been one and it just happened to be a black kid. Or this is because of fatherlessness, or I don't know. Pick your whatever. I guess here's what it is. When they first talked about it, it was a huge news story that they couldn't shut up about it. And they never mentioned race. And then you're like, we know why you're not mentioning it. You're trying to get the American public to think it's a white person when it's a black person. And then, you know, just like every other time, that was accurate. I'm not bringing race into this stuff. The mainstream media brings race into everything, every time. And when they only do it 85% of the time, that's every time. I'm always right half the time. I had three interactions on Spotify this week. Dan said, unfortunately, the right is like a horse tied to a hitching post. It could easily just snap the tether with strength, but it's trained not to. So many stupid people and nothing to eat them. I agree, Dan. Eric said, many thanks for your efforts. No problem, Eric. And Chopper22 said, another good episode. I got a few buddies that I introduced to your pod, told them to spread the word. I think Spotify is fucking you around. I think you might be right, Chopper22. And I made a political donation this week, sort of. I signed up for Twitter Blue or whatever they call the thing. It's $8 a month. I mean, I don't have a politician that I love so much that I would give them money, but I think if Elon Musk was in control of Twitter back before the 2020 election, he would have blown the Hunter Biden stuff. Well, he would have allowed people to talk about it, which would have changed the results of that election. And so I guess that's what I want. I want people to vote based on reality and the truth. That's a pretty hard thing to put money towards, and, you know, Twitter's the best thing I could think of. It was a little bit of a nightmare signing up for it. I can't quite recommend it to my listeners. Now let's put it this way. The part where you give them money, that goes easy enough. Actually, that wasn't easy either. I wanted to give them $8. They're like, give me $16, and you gotta search for the little thing to click on to find the $8 one. I guess if you do try it yourself, it does exist. Somewhere on there, you can find the $8 one. And then if you want the blue check mark, you gotta take a picture of your driver's license. And man, I struggled with that for a long time. Eventually, it turned out I had to go outside and get like direct sunlight to get the glare off of my ID. And if you're curious what I look like, I did a short on my YouTube channel, link in the description, of me talking. You can see my, that's not a bad looking mug. And on Twitter also, I did a picture of me. I've been helping a buddy do some logging. And so it's me next to a giant board, a board that's like almost 2 feet wide and 20 feet long. The various politically motivated court cases against Trump are continuing. In particular, the DOJ special counsel January 6th one, Jack Smith, the guy in charge, is asking the Supreme Court to basically make sure that the court case happens right in the middle of the run-up to the election. Biden is using the DOJ to attack Trump. Trump wants to delay the court case until after he possibly wins so he can use the DOJ to not attack himself. One of my woke friends on Facebook was saying that Donald Trump was super dangerous. And I was like, yeah, look out for that guy. He might use the Department of Justice to attack his political enemies. And a bunch of my woke friends like gave me thumbs ups on that. They have no idea that that is exact. I was trolling, and that's exactly what Biden is doing to Trump as we speak. I mean, Biden is using the DOJ in a corrupt manner to attack his enemies, and using it in a corrupt manner to get his son off the hook. So if Trump does, you know, Trump may do one of those two things, Biden's already doing it double. He's doing it both directions. But basically, you know, people have Trump derangement syndrome. They don't think of this Department of Justice thing as a politically motivated attack. They're like, of course, this is just what happens. You know, Trump, he's the next Hitler, January 6th, you know, any of the inconvenient facts, you know, in one ear, out the other, over their head, between their legs. And the latest 538 podcast had some lady on there saying the same noises. Let's play a little clip of her.
But there's also the fact that the practice of not pursuing political opponents in the United States is one that resides more in customs and practices and norms and some law, but pretty soft law, things like Department of Justice regulations that can be easily undone. So all those constraints are ones that the president could easily try, and I think very likely could succeed in eroding and potentially destroying entirely. And I think that the civil service inside DOJ and other government agencies will remain something of a bulwark against those kinds of efforts. So you could see things like, you know, mass pushback and potentially mass resignations on the part of the career officials inside the Department of Justice. But I do think that, you know, using the apparatus of state not only to reward your friends but to punish your enemies would involve, I mean, the rewarding friends, I think, is something we have seen some of before. Really punishing enemies is something that we really haven't in the last, I would say, 150 years in, you know, essentially since the advent of the civil service in the 1880s and the sort of beginning of entrenchment of norms of nonpartisanship in government service.
I don't know. This lady's cluelessness makes me laugh. She's like, in 150 years, no one has used the DOJ to attack their political enemies. And, you know, it is literally happening as she speaks. And I think what she's hanging her hat on is the emergent conspiracy theory, you know, like a school of fish knows how to turn left. It's an emergent phenomenon. And so, you know, a bunch of the people at the DOJ have Trump derangement syndrome. Biden gets to appoint the people at the very top. He appoints more people with Trump derangement syndrome. And then he doesn't have to specifically call them and say, get Trump next Tuesday. He just sits back. Obviously, they're going to go after Trump. And I guess to her, you know, rigging the election, that was the Biden campaign getting together with the CIA and the FBI and big tech to silence opposing voices and hide information that would swing the election. But that's not the Biden administration doing it, because they hadn't been elected yet. You know, the rigging happened before they were elected, so they're not using any sort of government stuff in a wrong way to get what they want. It was just the campaign, not the administration. And the DOJ, it's just all the Trump deranged people you put in charge, not you specifically telling people who love Trump to do something they don't want to do. It's like, I just put the child molester in charge of babysitting the kids. I didn't do anything wrong. Let's let her say it in her words.
Well, you know, so there are norms against the president calling up the attorney general or the head of the criminal division in the Department of Justice and saying, go after this guy.
So you can see, that is her criteria for when someone has gone too far. I mean, it's a heads she wins, tails you lose, because the Department of Justice, even under Trump, has Trump derangement syndrome and wants to take Trump down. I guess here's the question. If Trump gets into power and he fires all the people at the Department of Justice and he just puts Biden derangement syndrome people in there and they go after Biden, is she going to go, oh, that's fine, he didn't specifically tell them to do it? The U.S. Army set aside 110 convictions from the 1917 Houston riot or Houston mutiny. So the 1917 Houston riot, what's that? That's what I said. Well, it's kind of like the Tulsa Massacre from 1921. You might have heard of it. I've talked about it before. So the Tulsa Massacre, like, you know, when the media talks about it, or I think an HBO show, The Watchmen, had a segment on it. It's pretty famous. I think it goes along with Juneteenth and America's racist. Anyways, when you hear about it from mainstream sources, they talk about how white people went to a part of Tulsa and killed a bunch of black people and burned down the town. Black Wall Street, they called it. And then they leave out the part, obviously, where the beginning of the Tulsa Massacre was black people murdered 10 white people. That was how it kicked off. Well, to be fair, we don't know exactly what happened. The first 11 people who died in the Tulsa Massacre was one black person and 10 white people. And we don't know. I mean, it could have been white, white, black, white, or who knows? Maybe the first one was black, although it sounds most likely that, well, no, the first one was white. We don't know the order of the next white people and the black person. But I think it was 10 whites, then a black person was killed, and then a bunch more black people were killed. And you can go read the Wikipedia article. I think they bury it deep in the article, exactly what happened to kick it off, because no one wants to talk about that. Anyways, so that was 1921. 1917, a group of black army, I guess they were in the army, not veterans, soldiers, there we go. So a group of black soldiers in 1917 got it into their heads that white people were going around murdering blacks when they weren't. That same thing happened in Tulsa. Tulsa, they thought a lynching was going to happen when it wasn't. Anyways, in Houston, they thought white people were murdering blacks when they weren't. And so their reaction was, over 100 soldiers just went out and just started killing every white person they could get their hands on. And I think they killed 15 white people, and then 5 of the black people died from friendly fire. They were just, I guess they were shooting so wildly, they ended up killing themselves to a certain extent. And I could look this up and make sure on the numbers. I think the army put 19 of these black soldiers to death over it. So anyways, that was the part where America's racist. Can't be putting rampaging soldiers to death if they're black. So anyways, the army is like, we're not racist anymore. And so, I mean, it's one of those things, the Well, hell, it's been 100 years. It's been 100 years since those people were put to death, and the ones who were just convicted of something and didn't get put to death, they're long dead too. So, yeah, it doesn't really mean anything. But someone decided to do some virtue signaling. And basically, I don't know, did the army... I don't think the army was doing big press releases. Did they need to draw attention to it? They're like, hey, America, a bunch of black soldiers went on an anti-white rampage and killed a bunch of white people. That's obviously not their intention, but I don't know. That was kind of, maybe you had to read between the lines, or I don't know. Maybe you have to run in the wrong circles like I do to even heard about the army doing that. But I had previously said the reason why the army has gotten so woke, you know, they got like rainbow flags in their commercials and talking about white rage and blah blah, was because the generals in the army, when they retire, they go work at arms manufacturers and ESG and BlackRock and Vanguard, and you know, all the money people control the arms manufacturers with ESG making them woke, which means that you better get woke before you switch from your job as a general to a consultant for an arms manufacturer. But I heard another theory, and I think what I'm saying there is maybe a little bit right, but it's like, does every retiring person from the army go get a job as a consultant for an arms manufacturer? I mean, every general does probably, but not just every single last one of them. Some of them want to spend time with their families, that old chestnut. But I believe if you go into the army and you have a college degree, they make you an officer. You got like enlisted men and you got the officers. And I think lieutenant is the bottom of the officer chain. I think you can be like a private and then you can be a sergeant, and that's it. You got 7 different kinds of privates or something and a few kinds of sergeants. But basically that's the end of it for the enlisted men who don't have college degrees. And then the officers who have college degrees, you got lieutenants and corporals and majors and whatever. They sit around making up names because what else are they going to do? But basically, you know, everyone who graduates from college in the last 10 years is going to be a certain amount woke. I mean, especially if you've done it since Trump got elected. So I think, you know, that's why the army got woke. I mean, the very high up generals, they didn't go to college and get woke in college. They're moving on to the arms manufacturers. But all the younger lieutenants and whatnot, they went to a college that tried its hardest to make them woke, and I think it succeeded, at least to a certain extent. Here's a little bit of an old episode, just to make this whole thing longer. All right, this is this thing that they use for kids in school to teach them about how white people are evil and black people are good or whatever. It's called the privilege walk. So I'm going to go through the privilege walk, and I guess I'll give my answers as we go. So, if English is your first language, take one step forward. Yes. If either of your parents graduated from college, take one step forward. Yes. If you have been divorced or impacted by divorce, take one step backward. I get to go backwards there. I mean, you know, basically, if you go backwards, you're good. If you go forwards, you're evil. If there have been times in your life when you skipped a meal because there was no food in the house, take one step backward. No, I never missed a meal like that. I ate a lot of crappy hippie food, but no, never missed a meal. I wish I would have missed a meal. So, I mean, they should put that on there. Did you ever wish you missed a meal? That's what I wish. If you have visible or invisible disabilities, take one step backward. As a kid, I didn't. Well, you know, I mean, I think I did. I don't know. That's a wash. If you were encouraged to attend college by your parents and family members, take one step forward. You know what's crazy is all my family members were college people. They never encouraged me to do college. I didn't go to college, not until like 15 years later. If you grew up in an urban setting, take one step backward. I think that's false. I mean, you know, they're trying to get like the poor black ghetto kids to be lifted up as good by taking one step backward here, but I grew up in like the super crappy like rural redneck stuff, so anyways I guess I have to not take a step backward, but I should have to. I should be entitled to taking a step backward there, but I guess I'm not. If your family had health insurance, take one step forward. I don't know. I mean, I think sometime we did, sometime we didn't. If your work and school holidays coincide with the religious holidays that you celebrate, take one step forward. I was an atheist, so I don't have to go forward like a piece of crap white person. If you studied the culture or the history of your ancestors in elementary school, take one step forward. I mean, I'm Polish. We didn't talk about Poland. I think they're saying that if, you know, whatever. I think they're saying if you're white, you're evil, and therefore you get to take an evil step forward. So I guess I get that. I go forward on that one. Yes. If you've been bullied or made fun of based on something you cannot change, in other words, your gender, ethnicity, age, or sexual orientation, take one step backward. I got bullied like a motherfucker, but you know, that's because I was a nerd, so I think that doesn't count. I don't know, you know, and being a nerd is actually all right. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Anyways, moving on. If you've ever felt passed over for an employment position based on your gender, ethnicity, age, or sexual orientation, take one step backward. You know, that's interesting. Scott Adams, the guy who did Dilbert. I don't know if this is true, but he's on the right, and he said that he's been told multiple times in his life, like, you know, he has a business degree from Berkeley. Whatever, very highfalutin stuff. And he's been told to his face multiple times that they can't have a white man be you know, they have to move someone up and it can't be a white man. So, you know, so I guess that one's interesting. It's like, is it really white people who are gonna or black people are gonna, oh yeah, I got passed over, or is it gonna be white people who say they got passed over? Anyways, you know, I think in 1920, it was black people getting passed over every single time because of real racism. But I think in 2020, oh, it's a white person getting passed over because of also real racism every single time. All right, next up. If you were ever offered a job because of your association with a friend or family member, take one step forward. I got two real crappy jobs because someone I knew worked there. So, you know, that's basically like, do you know someone who has a job? And then they recommend you. If you were ever stopped or questioned by the police because they felt you were suspicious, take one step backwards. You know, I used to drive a car that was the exact same thing as like a black gang-banging drug dealing car. It was like an 82 Cutlass Supreme with like pretty cool wheels. Anyways, I got pulled over once. They took one look at me. Once they pulled me over, they took one look at me and let me go. So I don't know what that means. I guess that means I'm evil. If you or your family ever inherited money or property, take one step forward. Well, yeah, no, that's a yes. If you come from a supportive family environment, take one step forward. There, it's a mixed bag there. If one of your parents was ever laid off or unemployed, not by choice, take one step backwards. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure my parents have been laid off, so yay, I get to go backwards on that one. Backwards means you're good, forwards means you're an evil piece of crap. If you are a citizen of the United States, take one step forward. Well, I am a citizen. If you were ever uncomfortable about a joke or statement you overheard related to your race, ethnicity, gender, appearance, or sexual orientation, but felt unsafe to confront the situation, take one step backward. When I was a kid, so I'm a Polak. When I was a kid, Polak jokes are going around like crazy. And so that's, you know, they got to say it like that. Were you ever uncomfortable about it? No, I didn't give a F. You know, did people make fun of the type of thing that I was? All the time. I didn't give an F, huh? It's almost like, you know, maybe not giving an F is what's important, as opposed to, oh, we need to stop people from making jokes. Maybe we need to stop people from giving an F. If your ancestors were forced to come to the United States not by choice, take one step backward. So, you know, that's for all the American descendants of slavery. I mean, you'd think they'd say like take 100 steps backwards. Ah, you win. If you took out loans for your education, take one step backward. Yay, I took out a loan for my education. I get to go back. I'm a good person. I'm one step backwards towards being good. If there were more than 50 books in your house growing up, take one step forward. You know, that's an interesting thing that I'll talk about sometime. It doesn't matter how much you read your kids, it matters how many books are in your house. And basically, let me tell you, that gets racist real quick, so never mind. That's a crazy thing, though. If you've ever felt unsafe walking alone at night, take one step backward. I mean, I've been attacked by people of a different race because of my race. But I generally didn't feel unsafe, even though I should have, and I, got attacked. Oh, here we go, finally. If you're a white male, take one step forward. They should make that 100 steps forward. I mean, there you go. That's funny. That's funny. That's the end of it. That's the last one. If you're a white male, take one step forward. You are a piece of crap. You are inherently evil. The day you were born, a little baby with a little penis and a little white skin, you are evil from that day forward. Never to be changed. Never to be good. You're an evil piece of crap.
Well, that's the end of the episode. Thanks for listening. There's some links in the description.